It's time for Real Money with David Holland. Because David isn't just a radio personality, but also provides financial advice to clients, we must pause for a word from our compliance department.
David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share a common ownership under Holland Financial. The views and advice expressed by David Holland and guests are general in nature. No statements or opinions given during this radio program are to be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not to be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after a thorough analysis of an individual situation. An engagement of services to be offered are only in states where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. And now for the man who doesn't preach about cutting up credit cards, doesn't waste your time talking about which razor blades to buy, won't tell you to sell everything you own and buy gold, or ever use big words to impress you and talk over your head. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, David Holland.
Here he is, and here I am, and welcome to the program. Glad you're with us. We've got some good stuff to talk about today. We never have bad stuff to talk about. It's almost always interesting, and what we think it is, we hope you think it is. So let's get right to it.
The fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott Connor.
What do you say, Scott?
Well, you have to be aware of the bad stuff at least.
Yeah, so, and when I say that, I shouldn't say good stuff, because you know you have to take the good, you take the bad, and there you have the
facts of life.
And the stock market. So, very good. You're a pop culture guy, see there?
That's from the 70s,
okay,
David.
So you're a pop culture guy from the 70s.
All right.
That's all right. Well, we just got to be aware. You're right. And our listeners need to be aware, and they're tuned to the right program to give them that. So without further ado, let them have it.
All right. Well, it really, Monday's trade was nothing too terribly exciting. The Dow only down about 15 points, S&P down 5, NASDAQ down 22. A lot of that on weakness in Apple. But I think really Apple more coming back to earth than showing weakness. Gold about flat, up to at $16.65. Oil flat at $104. Although on the national news, they're talking about how gas prices have been plunging. They say plunging a nickel a gallon. Plunging.
They love to use those words. And Scott's like, where's the plunge in my bill when I fill up?
Plunging a nickel a gallon. It's terrific. Tens at 192 today. So some money going into safety.
You want to plunge a knife trade into the... Let me show you some plunging.
Yeah, I mean, let's see it back in the high $2 range.
That would be a plunge.
That's a plunge.
That would be a plunge we could all agree on.
Yeah,
we could all agree
on. I would be just thrilled to death with that. So really pretty much a flat day. And you know, Tuesday's trade is the first day of the May trade. And May has been our sort of witching month, if you will, the last couple of years. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in May. You know, a lot of people like to say sell in May and go away. Just because it rhymes doesn't mean it's good advice. Although
that's a good point.
The last couple of years, it has not been terrible advice.
Well, talk about that. When you say that, the last couple of years, 2010 and 2011, both years about through March or April, the economy looked like it was picking up steam.
Yeah.
And then the balance of both years, somebody let the air out of the basketball, and no point in staying at school if you can't play at recess.
Yeah, the problem with selling May and go away is that there's nothing that follows it up that says, but also don't forget to buy on October 1st, which would have been the way to play last year, but you can't do that. So a lot of those old axioms, I mean, sometimes there's a little bit of statistical validity
to
them.
You get lucky.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not really something that we pay much attention to.
Well, is there something different this year, you think, about the market, the economy, that would have it not be a three-peat?
Well, the situation in Europe is different. It's not good, but I think there's more infrastructure, more support in place.
And they're more aware.
Yeah, they're more aware. They're more able to react. So that is definitely different. I think one of the things that's concerning me is that we're definitely seeing a slowdown in jobs creation. So that's concerning to me. Last year, it was all about Greece, and that's really when the market started to sell off in the summer. It was all about Greece. This year, I think there are less acute things, meaning less things that are really
surprises,
specifically damaging, but there are more things that are sort of dully negative, if you will.
Okay, so we know about it. It's not some acute or surprise situation.
Yeah.
It's not like we don't know that Spain has 25% unemployment. We already know all this.
Yeah, that's right.
So if something happens there, it's the market reacts very badly to surprises.
Yeah, really the surprises are the worst thing. And also keep in mind last year when things, the first real sign of trouble that we had was from a tsunami in Japan. So, you know, there's no rhyming market axiom that says when there's a tsunami in Japan, go hold somebody's hand. You know, there's nothing like that.
Did you think it'd work on that today?
No, that just...
Okay, so you just popped that in your head. That's pretty good.
Yep. On economic news, there was a couple pieces of economic news on Monday. Midwest business activity has slowed down, according to the Chicago ISM. So that just kind of adds on to our theme that we've been talking about the last couple of weeks, that we're really starting to see some wavering, you know, a little bit of wobbly wheels here on the recovery. Household income did climb to 0.4% in March. That's the best gain we've had there in 3 months. And consumer spending was up 0.3%. So income up more than spending, which is rare. Usually spending is up more than income.
That's encouraging. So why the bummer?
Well, it really wasn't that much of a bummer. I mean, the Dow only down 15 is mostly
yeah,
was all
but
a flat
some of the
day.
News we're hearing, you know, GDP is only 2.2.
I do think that some of the poll over Monday's market is hangover from Friday's GDP number.
Okay.
I mean, that 2.2 number was surprising. We were looking for 2.5. The previous quarter was 3.0.
But personal income's up. Expenses are not as high.
Yep.
Corporations are making money. So
yeah, but we've got the slowdown in the GDP. Now we've got that. On top of that, we've got the slowdown in Midwest business activity, which is kind of like a mini GDP, if you will. And then on top of that, we had the second increase in weekly jobless claims last Thursday that we've had in the last couple of weeks, even though it was technically a drop, blah, 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 revise. And so, you know, things are definitely showing some weakness. Also on Monday's market, Spain announced that they have fallen into a recession. Their economy shrank by 0.3%, but economists were looking for 0.4% shrinkage. So actually their recession's not quite as bad as maybe we had thought.
Well, if they keep it up, that's, I mean, again, a month doesn't make a trend, but that's going to be
two quarters.
Okay, well, it's going to be it's going to be well over 3% shrinkage for the entire economy.
Yeah.
And their economy is a trillion and a half almost.
Yeah.
So let me see, 30% of a trillion and a half would be $500 billion. So that's was that $50 billion shrinkage in their economy?
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. And when we come back, I have quite a bit of interesting corporate news to tell you.
All right. Well, let's do that. And we'll take a quick break. We will return. And I have to ask Scott about a little bit more about Apple and what he thinks about folks out there telling you to sell options on it. Stay tuned.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read. You'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
Now it's time for a breakdown from Finglish to English.
We are back, and I threw out just to mix up and kind of derail Scott's plan discussion. That's my favorite thing to do. I heard on the radio, not this program, nor on neither of the stations that this program airs on. How's that? That's a mouthful.
Yeah, that's good.
I'm sure my English teacher from high school just got a hold of that and said, "What is he doing?" But I had somebody talking the other day about shorting Apple. The guy was going on and on about how smart it would be to short Apple. And it struck me as just reckless.
Yeah, shorting.
What do you think?
Shorting is a whole other animal. When you short a stock, rather than, you know, the traditional strategy is to buy something low and then sell it when it gets to high. Well, shorting.
Hold on, wait a minute. Say that again.
Buy low, sell high.
All right, I just wrote that down.
It's in
the
philosophy.
Okay.
Shorting is the opposite of that, where you want to sell something first and then later on you buy it back at a lower price. Generally speaking, it's something you don't have, so you have to go out and borrow it. So shorting, you borrow shares of a company from somebody else and you sell them.
You borrow and then sell them.
Yeah, with the expectation being that you'll buy them back at some point and replace them wherever you borrowed them from. So first, there's a borrowing cost. That's called margin. So you've got a built-in expense already. The longer you have that short out there, the longer you're borrowing and you've got that expense out there. But the biggest problem with shorting that people don't realize is that there's no limit to your downside. If you buy a stock for $20 and it goes to zero.
Well, use Apple. Use Apple. Let's say you bought, you shorted Apple at, let's say you short Apple where it is today. Where's Apple?
580.
Okay, so you say you shorted it 580 because that means you're going to go borrow it from somebody who owns it.
Yeah.
You're going to sell it.
In the market.
In the market, and then you're going to hopefully then buy it back and put it back, give it back to the person you borrowed it from.
Right. So obviously, what you expect, your expectation is the stock is going to go down.
So you're going to hope and pray that it goes to $100 a share.
Right. But if you buy a stock, if you just go out and buy Apple, just a traditional purchase in Apple, the most you can lose is $580 a share, because if it goes to zero, you lose all $580.
Okay.
But if you short Apple, and let's say over time it goes to $2,000. Well, if you've lost three times the price of the stock at that point,
you can lose $1,400 a share.
Yeah, so technically you can lose a whole lot more per share than the stock is worth.
So why would somebody recommend that?
To me, it's a very aggressive, a very risky strategy, and you really shouldn't be recommending anything to anybody unless you know what their situation is.
So no over-the-radio specific advice?
No.
It's not very smart.
No.
Okay. But if they... Talk about the put, though. What if you do a put? How would that work?
Well, it depends on what side of it you're on. If you buy a put, when you buy an option, you have the right to do something. So
okay,
if you,
so you're buying the option to put something.
Yeah, if you buy a put, you have the right to sell that stock at a specific price. So if Apple's 580 right now, let's say you buy a put at 550, that means you have the right to sell that stock of Apple at $550 a share. Now, you're not going to sell it at 550 if it's worth 580, right?
No, because you want it to drop and go to $300.
Yeah, or you can use it as protection. I
right.
mean, if you already hold Apple, you might want to just sort of lock in your price there. So options, as opposed to shorts, because shorts are different, but options can be very, very, very conservative. They can be very, very, very aggressive, and they can be somewhere in between depending on how you utilize them.
But you can mitigate or limit your losses more effectively than you would perhaps like with a short.
Yeah, if you do it right.
Okay.
A short is not a risk minimization technique.
It's a bet. It's a bet.
Yeah, at all. An option can be, depending on how you use it.
Okay. Good. Well, I wanted to get that because I think a lot of people don't understand these things, and probably people start talking about puts, barbells, dumbbells, straddles, all this stuff, and they think you're talking about exercise equipment.
Yeah. Yeah, options are very, very tricky, and margin trading on the short side is very, very tricky. Margin trading on the long side is very tricky, too, because you can get leveraged quickly, and you're adding a layer of expense.
It's not for the weak or uninitiated.
Yeah, it definitely is not. It's like any other profession. You know, if you're a car mechanic, if you're a psychiatrist, you don't want to see people dabbling in that maybe don't really have experience in it.
Well, they do more harm than good.
Yeah,
they imagine
harm,
a part-time psychiatrist.
Right. Yep, that's exactly right.
Go ahead.
Okay, a lot of mergers and acquisition news in Monday's market that I want to talk about. Microsoft announced that they are going to purchase, not all of, but a significant piece of Barnes & Noble's Nook, the number 3 tablet in the market.
So you don't like the deal?
Why would you buy the number 3 tablet?
Because they think they can make it number 1. They think they're getting a deal on it, right?
Really, they think they can make it number 1 past the iPad?
Or maybe they think they can put their Microsoft operating system number 8 on it.
Well, that's what it's all about, is operating system. They're trying to get their operating system out there, and they're going to try to do it through this Nook. Barnes & Noble needed the money badly. They have been hemorrhaging money, not only in the stores, but also in the Nook itself, because they've been putting so much money into R&D. So pretty big news there.
Well, you know what's really interesting on that, Scott, is that what they're doing is they're carving off and they're creating this subsidiary.
Right.
And they haven't even named it yet. And what they're going to do is they're going to take all the digital business in the Nook, as well as the college textbooks.
Yeah, which is big business and a big target of Apple's.
Exactly. They're going to take all that and shove it down into a subsidiary that then Microsoft owns how much of?
Almost 18%.
Okay, so that's not a controlling interest, but they got a big input. And Microsoft has the cash.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, you got the time, I got the beer, you know?
Yep.
So they're putting that together. I think it is kind of a, but what's interesting is that the rest of the stuff that's more stodgy and maybe not slower growth or not profitable, is staying out of it.
Yeah, $600 million investment for Microsoft, which is good because they're notorious for stockpiling cash. That investment makes this spinoff, if you will, if that's how they want to do it, worth about $1.7 billion, which is interesting because all of Barnes & Noble's current market capitalization is only about $800 million.
That's wild. That's wild. Yeah, that tells you all the values in the the digital stuff.
Yeah.
Is that it? You want to take a quick break?
I mean, I don't, but I think Lisa does.
All right, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back. I know you got a bunch more stuff. There's good stuff to get to here. Stay tuned.
What's your dream? Play golf every day of the week? Turn that hobby into a new career? With careful planning, you can make it happen. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your no-obligation consultation. At Holland Financial, we want to help you take the first step towards making your dreams a reality. That number again is 888-747-7526.
We're back already. There we are.
Hi.
I'll have to answer that question, Mr. Connor, on the next break.
I'll look forward to that. More corporate
news. I did not travel this weekend.
Big news for Boeing. China Eastern Airlines has agreed to buy 20 B777s, the 777, the Dreamliner. They're going to buy 20 of them.
Who's buying it?
China Eastern Airline. Total deal valued about $6 billion. So
that's
good
a pretty
news
good
for
deal.
Boeing. Yep. Here was an interesting one that came out on Monday's market. About halfway through the day, this story came out that said Coca-Cola is going to buy Monster Beverage, formerly Hansen's Natural.
Get out.
Well, that's what they said. Monster Beverage is the big energy
I've seen
company.
Their big cans, and they got the cans. Big claw marks on the side. And it looks like it's about 32-ounce can.
Yeah.
And I've never even had that because it looks like it's got like 4,000 grams of caffeine.
Yeah, I don't know much about them, to be honest, but that is a market that Coke has. They've really tried to get into. They have their own product.
Didn't Coke start out that way, though?
Yeah, they did, ironically.
Didn't they?
but they're not keeping up with the Red Bulls of the world, so the rumor came out that they were going
to
buy
Hold
this.
Hold on. I'm sorry, Scott. We're going to go back to our original formula.
That's
we
right.
Put cocaine in our Coca-Cola.
Yeah, good luck with that one. Story came out that Coke was going to buy Monster Beverage. The stock went from $64 to about $84.
Which one?
Monster,
right?
In the course of nothing flat, traded up there for a while, and then at the end of the day, Coca-Cola came out and said, "What are you crazy? We're not paying $84 for a share for that company."
Oh, that's
company.
Funny. We didn't say we wanted it. We didn't say at what price.
They didn't even say they wanted it.
Who said they did?
Yeah, the rumor mill.
Nice.
It came out.
Nice.
So that's a non-story. So if anybody tells you that's happening, and then also this I thought was an interesting sort of an I try marketing this one. Titanic 2 planned by Australian billionaire. An Australian billionaire has announced that he is going to build a replica of the Titanic, and he's going to call it the Titanic 2. He's going to have a shipyard in China build it. He's going to have it to the exact same dimensions, and he's starting a new company called Blue Star Line Party Limited. Just to give you a little bit of context as to how much the cruise industry has changed. When the Titanic was built, it was the biggest in the world, 882 feet, about 46,000 tons, 175 feet high. It wouldn't even be in the top 20 today.
Wow.
But he has decided that he's going to recreate the Titanic, and its maiden voyage will be from London to New York City.
Okay. I get him using the Chinese manufacturing because Australia, of course, that makes sense geographically. I don't know. It just seems like it should be a taboo or something. I don't know.
I don't know. It's a tough one to market.
Okay, well.
This time we'll get it right. Titanic 2.
Yeah, I just, there's so much there that I don't even want to joke about. Well, speak of something not to joke about. You know, we've been following, I have an update for you, and I know you're going to love this one.
All right.
Chesapeake Energy.
Yeah, our friend Aubrey.
Okay. Aubrey McClendon. He's the guy that did the whole deal where he's borrowing money from the company, he's borrowing and he's using his interest to be able to borrow and buy into these oil wells.
Yeah, he basically is partnering with his own company.
Exactly. And so that's just, it's part of, quote unquote, his deal.
That's his
deal.
It
turns out now that there is at least one former board member, and this is a Yahoo Finance, Chris Nichols, the exchange reporting this, but I'll get the exact quote in a minute. But a former board member had an undisclosed personal financial ties with him. And apparently the same guy was setting his, on the compensation committee to set his comp.
Terrific.
I mean.
You know, in the CFA program, they spend a lot of time, particularly in level one, talking about corporate governance and the jobs of boards and how important it is to not have all this sort of nonsense take place, and this is exactly why.
Well, it's crazy, and for those of you out there who don't know what a CFA is, it's a chartered financial analyst, and it's a big deal. You know what I tell people, Scott? Because I always, you know, I'm talking about you. You know that, right?
Yeah.
You like that a lot, yeah, I know. Yeah. I talk about Scott all the time, and I say it's CFA is kind of like a CPA of investments, and people get that because it's really hard, and you know, you've got to have a certain quirkiness to you to get it, and that, you know, you got that covered, and like a CPA, right?
Yeah, sure. I have no... No denial to any accusation thrown.
Well, speaking of quirkiness, Dow Jones Industrial Average. You know, one of the things that's interesting is everybody follows a Dow.
Yeah.
And there was a thing on Breakout for Yahoo. I know you love those. And Matt Nesto was talking about it. And basically, everybody looks to the Dow like, well, what's going on with the market? What's going on with the market? The Dow 30. But the Dow 30, it's just IBM now is kind of like Apple is to the NASDAQ because these things get all out of whack.
Yeah, the Dow is price-weighted specifically. So even if you only have a company that only has one share of stock, if it's the most expensive share, it has more impact on the Dow than every other stock in there, to put it, you know, in sort of a silly way.
It's kind of like looking at Monopoly, having Boardwalk right next to Baltic and saying, well, you know, let's give them it, and Boardwalk's 10 times the price.
Yeah.
The same deal. Well, every professional traders look to the S&P.
Yeah.
Because that gives you what? The broadest market.
It gives you the broadest large cap.
Okay.
Look.
And that's because it's going to have the companies. You know, what's funny is Alcoa is in the Dow and everybody kind of fusses over it. But in the S&P, it's actually less than, it's halfway down. It's less than halfway down or more than halfway down, whereas ranks 290 out of the 500.
Yeah, the S&P just takes the 500 largest companies. They don't really care what industry they're in or anything like that. The Dow tries to have specific exposure to certain industries. So a company like Alcoa, if they're trying to get materials sector, they have to have something in there for materials. And that's why Alcoa is in there.
Okay. Well, we're going
to
take a quick...
But for me, I'll tell you that I don't pay much attention to the Dow other than to check it to come in and tell you every day.
Because people just want to know. We've been trained... What is it? Just we've been trained... our culture...
It's the oldest. It's the oldest index.
Did they get sold? Did it get sold?
They have been
messing with that for a while
now? A couple times, but I think Rupert Murdoch's company owns it now.
Okay. Well, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, I've got something you won't believe. Now they're talking about messing with 401ks and taxing them. Stay tuned.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
That's a load of bull.
That is a load of bull. That's a special request by Lisa. She said, you know, I know what you're going to talk about, and it is a load of bull, so thank you, Lisa. Okay, get this, ladies and gentlemen. Now they're talking about, you know, we're running, Scott, I know you love to keep track of this. We're running trillion-dollar deficits, spending money we ain't got, okay? And we've got a $15.5 trillion national debt, and now they're like, okay, well, where are we going to get the money? So it's starting to circulate in political circles, okay, it's starting to be talked about, maybe taxing 401ks. Now, when I say that...
Contributions?
Taxing the contributions or substantially reducing the amount you can put into them and thereby causing everybody to have to, you know...
pay tax.
Pay tax on that money. And also, guess what else? Okay, you got to pay the tax and then you then reinvest it. And there's a lot of discussion on this, and... They asked a guy, let's see, Urban's Brookings Tax Policy Center co-director William Gale. I guess he's kind of in the middle of this firestorm that he was doing some calculations. Anyway, it comes up with $460 billion in additional tax revenue. You know where that's going to come from?
Yeah, sure.
Come from you, Scott Connor.
Yeah.
So,
you know what's the scariest part of that is that Americans are habitually not savers.
So the 401k, which was created back 30-some years ago, actually sparked this whole saving revolution.
Yeah.
And now they're going to disincentivize or reduce the incentives to do that.
Yeah. And if you don't take money out of people's checks they won't save it. But a lot if they take it out of their check, then it gets saved.
A lot of people would not. And the thing that's very interesting is not only I don't think this is going to be the end of it. I think they're going to reduce the amount you can put in, which forces you to then turn around and hopefully pay tax and then invest it.
Or spend it.
So I don't know how that's going to play out. Probably a lot of people will spend it, which I guess would be good for the economy.
It helps growth.
Now, I think they'll go even further, because what they really want, those that want to increase taxes to fund the deficit, what they really want is to get to those big IRA accounts that haven't been taxed yet. And there is trillions, I think the number, this is an investors.com powered by Investors Business Daily article. And the number that was in the article was $18 trillion in 401k accounts. They want to get to that. You know how
it's got to come out at some
Here's how they're going to do it. Okay. Here's my prediction. One of the ideas they're going to start talking about, we all know that there are these required minimum distributions. Yeah. You have to take at 70 and a half.
Yeah. Lower the age.
They can lower the age.
Increase
but guess
the
what?
Rate.
They can increase the rate. Yeah. But if they really are after the bigger accounts, once upon a time, back, I think they changed this rule in the early 90s, but once upon a time, they used to force you to take out more if you had a larger IRA account. Because they did this funky calculation and there was a 15% tax. Does it sound familiar? They had a 15% tax on top of your regular taxation that they would put if you had what they called it. It had a funny word for it, but basically it was a success.
Kind of like a top-heavy rule.
Yeah, success. You successfully accumulated a bunch of money in your IRA. Now we're going to tax you an extra 15% for having done it. So anyway, this is crazy. This is where we're headed. All because we can't live within our means as a country. Unlimited wants, finite resources. Welcome to the United States of America. Welcome to anywhere around the world.
Yeah.
What country doesn't have that problem? I only could think of one. China.
Yeah.
And they still have debt, but it's nothing as a percentage. Russia,
they have 7% growth.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just a common affliction of the developed Western civilization.
Yeah.
So I think it's, and here's one more thing I wanted to get in. We never got a chance to talk. You mentioned oil's been plunging.
Well, gas has been plunging. Oil's been flat.
Okay, why is that?
I don't know.
We're still waiting to see what sorts out with Iran. Is that why?
Yeah, there's you know, always questions about supply coming from the Middle East, and there are questions about demand now, but oil hasn't moved much.
Well, I thought an interesting development, you talked about mergers acquisitions going on, is Delta.
That is an interesting one. Odd, I think.
Delta is going to buy Delta Airlines, not Delta Faucets, because they're not going to be...
That would be odder.
That would be even odder to try to... Yeah. Maybe they would retrofit the refinery for... But anyway, Delta is buying ConocoPhillips refinery in Pennsylvania. And I think that's extraordinary. I think it's smart. I just don't know if they can pull it off.
Yeah, and it's a big shift in...
The number two carrier, and people are laughing about it, but basically it's a strategic decision, because if it wasn't something they bought, then they'd have a hard time getting, because they're concentrated in that area with a lot of their flights.
Yeah.
And so.
And they got a big payout from the state to do that too.
Oh, you think, okay.
I know they did.
Now that makes more sense.
And Sunoco also was sold, the refinery Sunoco was sold to Energy Transfer Partners on Monday. $5.3 billion deal. Sunoco, some really, really old refineries that they're going to have to refurbish there. So lots going on in refinery business today.
So maybe that'll get those gas prices down once they start.
Plunge them.
All right. Well, Scott wants his plunging gas prices, don't we all? And that's all we have for you today. Be sure to tune in next time. Thank you.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.
You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul.
to the company store.